eyes don't move from the swimming hole. I don't care. I'm not leaving. Not until you get her out of there. It might not even be Allegra, Tommy says, and I hear the edge of desperate hope in his voice. I turn my head finally to look at him. It's her, Tommy. You stay right here. Tommy draws an invisible line across the ground. No matter what, you don't cross it. You hear me? I nod, back up a step for good measure. I won't leave until she's out of that water. If they try to make me, I will lose my mind. A flush of panic and sorrow already swirling in my chest. It seems like lifting her out of the swimming hole should be quick and easy. But the minutes tick away and nothing happens. A cluster of county sheriff's deputies talk quietly near their cars, and a few people in black t-shirts crouch down near the edge of the water. One big-boned woman with a camera taking photograph after photograph.
You didn't touch anything,
a cop with a notebook asks me. It's at least the 10th time I've been asked the same question. No. I saw her body and tried to call Tommy, but I couldn't get a connection on my phone, so I drove back toward Roanoke until I could call. Then I came right back here and waited for you to show up. I never touched the water or her at all. The cop's writing down what I say when he glances over my shoulder and his body stiffens.
Excuse me a minute,
he says. Walks fast to Tommy. I look behind me and see puffs of dust in the near distance, a truck slamming over the ruts toward us. I steel myself for my granddad, his tears and heartbroken eyes. But when the truck finally stops, it's Cooper who jumps out.
No,
Tommy calls as he walks toward Cooper.
Nuh-uh. This isn't a spectator sport. You need to get the hell out of here, Cooper.
Cooper holds up both hands, but doesn't stop walking in my direction. His face is pale and his eyes cut right through me.
I'm not here to gawk, Tommy,
he says.
Jesus Christ, I won't get in the way, and I won't say a goddamn word.
Tommy reaches him and they stand in a tense little huddle. I return my gaze to the swimming hole, and although their voices are low, I still catch a word here or there.
Can't have you,
she needs.
Worried. Let me.
Cooper must win the argument, because Tommy returns to the edge of the swimming hole, and Cooper comes to stand beside me where I'm leaning against my car. His arm brushes mine and he takes my hand, laces our fingers together and squeezes. A few tears overflow and run down my cheeks, as if the pressure of his hand has forced them out of me.
Hey,
he says.
I'm here.
All of the bitter anger wedged between us the last time we saw each other has evaporated. Now, Allegra's sodden corpse bridges the space between us. I don't trust myself to speak. Give a quick nod instead. He squeezes my hand again, keeps my fingers tight in his, and I let my head fall onto his shoulder. It's evening by the time they lift what remains of Allegra from the water. Her dark hair clotted with weeds.
Don't look, Cooper says.
But I can't look anywhere else. He raises our still joined hands to his chest, presses my fingers against his thumping heart. Tommy stays at Roanoke long after everyone else is gone. He sits at the kitchen table with me, both of us staring at a half-empty bottle of vodka, but neither of us making a move to drink it. Gran and Granddad went upstairs after Tommy gave them the news, climbing the main staircase together. Granddad leaned on Gran like he didn't trust his own legs, and she bore his weight all the way to the top. I know their love is twisted and ugly at its roots, but at least they have something. At least they have each other. It hardly seems fair when Allegra is lying alone somewhere in the back of a police van. What happens now? I ask Tommy. My voice is scratchy like I haven't spoken in weeks. Tears push against my vocal cords. But other than the few I shed at the swimming hole, my eyes have remained dry. Tommy, on the other hand, is leaking like a broken faucet, a steady stream of tears washing down his face, tripping over his stubble before landing on the tabletop.
We'll be back out there at first light.
No. I meant with Allegra.
Oh.
Tommy releases a hiccuping breath.
Now, there's an autopsy.
I nod, trying not to think about someone piecing Allegra back together, looking for the secrets of her death hidden on her body. How long will that take?
Depends on the backlog, but I wouldn't think more than a few days.
He lets out a shaky sigh, wipes both hands down his face.
Why would she have gone way out there to do it?
He asks.
We might never have found her.
You think she killed herself? I say, my voice as lifeless as Allegra's body. Tommy cuts his eyes in my direction, swings them back to the bottle of vodka.
Yeah, I do.
For someone who claimed to love Allegra? I don't know how he can be so stupid. I thought it was possible Allegra killed herself too, before we actually found her. But Allegra would never have chosen to end her life in the dirty water of the swimming hole, hair knotted with weeds, flesh puffy with rot. Someone else left her there, forced that final indignity upon her. But I'm not going to say that to Tommy, who has a lifetime of anger at Allegra, barely hidden beneath his love, whose wife despised Allegra with every bone in her second-best body. Or maybe Tommy just wants me to believe that Allegra committed suicide.
I've got to get home, Lane, Tommy says. When I know something, you'll know something.
After Tommy leaves, I swear I can hear the sound of my granddad weeping, although I know it's not really possible. But the thought of him shedding tears over Allegra makes me want to scream, and I burst out through the screened porch, breathing hard, muscles tight with the need to escape. I arrive at Cooper's dark doorstep without knowing how I got there. I certainly didn't have his house in mind when I sped down the lane away from Roanoke. We'd parted ways at the swimming hole once the cops were done. When he let go of my hand, I could still feel the beat of his heart against my fingertips. I knock without giving myself time to think about it. From beyond the door, I hear the sound of footsteps, and then Cooper is there in the open doorway, the spill of light from his house making me blink. Hi, I say, and give a ridiculous half-hearted wave. I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing here. Cooper says nothing, steps back and waits for me to come inside. I walk into his living room. He's been reading, a book tented on his coffee table, an open beer next to it.
Sorry, you're busy.
My voice catches, and I keep my eyes on his couch, my back to him.
I don't know why I came, I should go.
His warm hands settle on my shoulders as I speak, and he turns me into his body, wraps his arms around me, his lips pressing against my hair. The sobs spill out of me like gushing blood, raw and violent and threatening to tear my chest in two. I was never a girl who cried, grew into a woman who was scared of her own tears,
scared of letting them go. Scared of becoming my mother. But now I can't stop. The sounds I'm making, wild animal moans, embarrass me. But there's no way to control them.
Cooper moves toward the couch, pulling me along with him. He sits, and I crawl into his lap, bury my face in his neck. I cry until there's nothing left. My tears gone, and hollow, hiccupy sobs all that remain. My head feels fuzzy and overstuffed. My nose so clogged I can't breathe through it. I push back off Cooper's lap, although I keep my legs across his, and run my hands over my tear-swollen face.
God, I say.
I'm sorry, that was...
It was okay,
Cooper says. One of his hands rubs my bare foot. I lost my flip-flops somewhere between his door and couch.
It's okay, Lane.
I drop my hands and look at him, and he doesn't even flinch away from what I know has to be my wreck of a face.
She's dead,
I tell him, as if he wasn't standing next to me when they pulled her from the water.
Allegra's dead.
I know.
You don't seem surprised.
Cooper sighs.
You're not surprised either. Not really. Allegra was never going to end well. You know that. Whether it was her body in the swimming hole, or a handful of pills, a razor blade.
His voice trails off.
She didn't kill herself,
I say, before I think about whether I should.
You think someone hurt her?
Cooper asks. When I don't answer, he traces my foot from big toe to ankle and back again.
What happened inside that house, Lane? What made you run?
I can't tell him the truth he's asking about. Not yet. Maybe not ever. But I can tell him a different truth. One more painful for him, but easier for me. Which, given our history, sounds about right. I slide my hand down to my belly, lift my shirt up slightly. Cooper's gaze follows my movement, his brow furrowed. My fingers find the tiny, smooth marks, like strands of delicate silver thread sewn into my skin. No one else has ever noticed them, not even Cooper these past weeks, when his hands and mouth have roamed over my body endlessly.
I had a baby, I say.
The words slide out of me like air leaving a balloon, gone before I'm able to snatch them back. I don't look at him as I speak. A little girl. I feel Cooper's body tense.
You have a kid?
No. I gave her up. His hand shifts against my foot, restless.
When?
The spring after I went away. Cooper's hand leaves my foot. His head falls back against the couch and he closes his eyes.
Was she mine?
He asks finally. The question hurts in a way I didn't anticipate, although it's a fair one for him to ask. Yes, I tell him. She had a dusting of blonde hair and lips too plump for her tiny face. She was 3 days old when I gave her up, and already a single dimple had formed in her cheek, just big enough for me to rest the tip of my pinky finger in when I held her. I would have named her Elizabeth. He lifts his head back up, looks at me, and this time I hold his gaze.
Why didn't you tell me?
I feel something ugly poised right on the end of my tongue. Something designed to injure in the worst possible way. I take a deep breath, fight against the need to damage ingrained in me from birth. I was scared, I say, when I can speak without hurting, or at least not hurting on purpose. I didn't think it mattered, Cooper. I didn't think you cared anymore. We were like two animals by the end, circling around each other, waiting to see who would die first.
I would have cared,
Cooper says.
I always fucking cared.
I couldn't be a mother. I hold my hands out to him like I'm asking him to understand. When I recognize how pathetic it looks, I let my hands drop. I didn't know how. I didn't want to raise another girl like us. Another Roanoke girl.
But she wasn't a Roanoke, Lane. She was a Sullivan.
Trust me, I say with a cold little laugh. If she'd been born in this town, she would have been a Roanoke. And you wouldn't want that for your daughter. Not ever.
That's why you left. Because you were pregnant.
I nod, and it's not a lie. But it's still only half the truth.
Are you sorry you gave her up?
He asks. No. I take a deep, uneven breath. But I'm sorry I didn't know how to keep her. Cooper shifts away from me, pushes my legs off his lap. His bare feet make a hollow slapping sound against the wood floor as he stands.
Well,
he says, drawing out the single word until it takes on the weight of a larger declaration.
We would have made shitty parents anyway.
Here's what I remember. Horrible bouts of morning sickness where my stomach curled and rolled like ocean waves. The inside of my mouth left salty and slick. Snipping the waistbands of my cheap maternity pants so they would still fit as my stomach grew beyond what I had previously imagined possible. Endless nights of no sleep, straining arms and legs crushing my lungs. Pain as big as the world. Searing, unbearable beats of hell I managed to endure, only because I had no other choice. The nurse's eyes, equal measures pity and scorn, as she held my hand in place of someone who actually cared about me. The relief that came when my body was finally rid of her. Empty again, and free. A cry like winter wind, searing and bare, a lonely howl when they took her from my arms. These are all the same things I wish I could forget. Allegra, born 1989, died 2015. If you opened up a dictionary to the word normal, you'd find Tommy Kenning's picture there. He was apple pie and football, homecoming king, and white teeth, two kids and a minivan. He always claimed he saw Allegra first, when she was in second grade and he was in fifth, noticed her out of all the other girls. Allegra let him believe that, but she'd actually been the one to set her sights on him. Allegra had always known normal wasn't a regular stop on her crazy family train. But when she was next to Tommy, she could pretend, if only for a little while, that her world spun in the same orbit as his. As they grew older, she even entertained thoughts of actually marrying him, the way he always suggested. Occasionally went so far as to talk about it with him, what her dress would look like, where they would live, what they would name their first baby. Tommy's eyes would light up. He'd get that eager, puppy dog look on his face. She could practically see the wheels working in his head as he tried to figure out how to make it happen before she changed her mind. And then she would dance away from him. Not for good, not too far,
but enough to throw a bucket of cold water on his fantasies of the future. She had to give Tommy credit, though. She didn't think he'd ever actually have the balls to cut her loose. But when he started dating sad little Sarah Fincher, he told Allegra they were over, said he wouldn't be coming to see her anymore. He couldn't wait any longer for his life to start. She'd watched him drive away, police cruiser slipping over a sheen of midwinter sleet. She'd had no urge to run after him. Sure, he'd be back. She'd always had Tommy right where she wanted him. Couldn't imagine this time would be any different. She'd carved a notch on the front porch railing every day, waiting. Stopped when she ran out of room. 216 days. And word from town that Sarah Fincher was Sarah Kenning now. When she heard, Allegra went up to her room and howled, buried her face in her pillow, and writhed against the grief and rage. She couldn't say whether she loved Tommy, had no real idea what that word even meant. But what she did know was that Tommy was hers. She got to decide when it was over, not him. Her granddad was right. Boys like Tommy couldn't be trusted. They pretended to love you and left you behind. But she'd shown Tommy who was in charge. It took only one night, her lips on his neck, her hand down his pants, and he'd caved. Like she knew he would, his precious wedding vows so much dust in the wind. It was almost sad how predictable he was. Plain Jane Sarah, just an afterthought when he had Allegra Roanoke spread wide in front of him. She thought such a triumph might ease the gnawing emptiness inside her. But it didn't. Not even a pink plus sign on the pregnancy test could do that. She suspected the baby was Tommy's. Somehow, it already felt more settled inside her than all the lost babies that had come before. But she doubted the true paternity would matter much to her granddad. Any baby born in this house belonged to Roanoke. Simple as that. And a baby would make her granddad so happy after all the disappointments over the years. But she kept putting off telling him the good news. Waiting, maybe, until she could manage to summon some of that happiness for herself. She considered telling Tommy, but she couldn't picture living in his crappy house, making him casseroles and changing diapers. And despite Tommy's frantic, and then increasingly angry, phone calls, she wasn't sure he would want that either. Because if there was one thing Tommy loved as much as he loved Allegra, it was his idea of himself as a decent guy. And dumping sweet Sarah and shacking up with already pregnant Allegra would shatter that image forever. No more apple pie Tommy after that. She found herself longing for Lane in a way she hadn't for years. She fantasized that Lane would walk through the front door again and know exactly what to do. Lane might be able to help Allegra have the strength to leave, to give her child a different kind of life. Or maybe Lane would stay, and Allegra wouldn't have to be alone anymore. They could bear it together. But reality always intruded, and she was left with the fact that Lane was gone. Like all the rest of the Roanoke girls, and it would take more than a baby in Allegra's belly to bring her back. So Allegra spent her mornings crouched over the toilet, vomit thick on her tongue. After, she splashed icy cold water on her face, pinched color back into her pale cheeks, set her mouth into a smile. She went downstairs and ate breakfast with her grandparents, opened her door, and then her legs, when her granddad knocked in the night. Woke up in the morning and did it all again. Watched the days flow by. Told herself this was what she'd always wanted. But the baby hidden inside her felt heavy, a leaden weight out of all proportion to its actual size. A looming, inevitable disaster. Then, my hands shook as I tore open the small package, and I told myself to breathe, calm down, get it together. I was locked in the bathroom down the hall from my bedroom, the house silent around me. Gran had gone to Wichita for the day. Allegra was supposed to go with her, but backed out at the last second, making an excuse about seeing Tommy that caused Gran's mouth to pinch up. And Grandad was working in some distant field, having driven off in a cloud of dust and country music not long after the sun rose. I'd never taken a pregnancy test before, but it didn't take much skill. Just pull out the stick and pee on it. But honestly, I didn't even need the test. I already knew. Had known for the last week every time my sore breasts brushed against Cooper's chest. Ever since the morning I woke up and spewed vomit into the toilet before my first bite of breakfast. Peeing on the stick was only a formality. The question was, what was I going to do afterward? Would I have it? Would I find a way to get to Wichita and get rid of it? Would I tell Cooper? I'd had my period since that night with Nick, so I knew the baby was Cooper's, even if he might not believe it. What would flash across his face at the news? Horror? Or joy? I wasn't dumb enough to think a baby could fix what I'd broken between us, our relationship already circling the end like water down the drain. But some stupid, childish part of me still hoped. For what, I wasn't even sure. I managed to pee on the stick with only minimal splashing onto my own fingers. I set the test on the back of the toilet, rinsed my hands in the sink. My face in the mirror was ashen, my eyes luminous. I couldn't stand there and count the seconds ticking by. I opened the bathroom door, and the house breathed around me, old wood settling. Roanoke always felt slightly alive, especially when I was there alone, as if it could lead me astray down unused corridors, whisk me away into the unknown, never to be seen again. I padded down the hall to my room, the wooden floor sticky under my feet. A hint of warm air swirled across my ankles, and I paused, confused. Gran always kept the windows of the unoccupied rooms closed. But air was flowing out from under the door at the end of the long hall. A guest room Allegra told me no one had used in years. I tiptoed to the door, set my hand on the cut glass knob. My heart slammed against my ribs, agitated in a way that made no sense. At most, someone had left open a window that should have been shut. There was no reason for the clammy touch of fear. No reason more than half of me was screaming to walk away, keep the door closed, leave well enough alone. Don't look. Don't look. I opened the door, slowly, gently, and it swung inward without a sound. All the room seemed to contain was a bed, although I knew that wasn't the case. But that's where my eyes landed. And after that, there was nothing else to see. They were on top of the covers, asleep, tangled together, naked. Grandad and Allegra. Her head on his chest, his arms wrapped around her, their legs entwined. His pale feet, usually covered by boots. Her sun-brown toes, the nails painted bubblegum pink. The summer warm breeze wafted the pale blue curtains inward, blew the earthy scent of sex into my face, ruffled the ends of Allegra's hair. Her body looked long and liquid. She was the most peaceful I'd ever seen her. I stumbled backward, shut the door with barely a click. I ran on silent feet back to the bathroom, closed the door, and locked it behind me. My brain roared. Roanoke girls. Special. You look exactly like your father. I loved him so much. It's supposed to mean that you're his favorite. Your mama was always my favorite. The best and worst secret. I barely made it to the toilet before I was sick, heaving up ropey strings of bile, slick and acrid. In one corner of my brain, I registered the bright pink plus sign on the pregnancy test. But the baby growing inside me felt very far away compared to the memory of Allegra and Granddad. The image of their bodies burned into my closed eyelids like a nightmare vision. I knelt before the toilet, gasping and sweaty. My knees ached where they pressed against the hard tile. Tears ran into my mouth, and their salt gagged me. Another round of nausea threatening. The real horror wasn't seeing them, wasn't finally knowing what deep down in the darkest part of myself I'd suspected all along. The horror came in acknowledging that my initial flush of shock hadn't lasted long, had been overtaken almost immediately by a neon flare of envy. Why wasn't it me? I covered my mouth with both hands to hold in the hysterical laughter. Why hadn't he picked me? That's how fucked up I was. That's how badly Roanoke twisted us all. I barged into Charlie's apartment without knocking. He was sitting on the couch watching a soap opera, which might have been funny on a different day.
Lane?
He pushed himself up from the saggy cushion, his brow furrowed. Can you drive me to Wichita? I asked. Charlie's eyes ran over my face, down my body to my leg.
You're bleeding.
I glanced down. I tripped in my haste to get up the stairs to his apartment, smashed my shin bone against the wooden steps. The cut was deep, but I couldn't even feel it. It's nothing. Please, Charlie. Can you drive me?
Why are you crying, Lane?
He asked. I gulped in air. Please, I said again, scrubbed at my wet cheeks with both hands. He pulled a handkerchief from his back pocket and handed it to me, waited until I'd wiped my face and handed it back before he spoke.
You running?
That's all he had to say. Those two words, enough to make the depth of his knowledge clear between us. I nodded, and Charlie's eyes dropped to the floor. I knew right then he wouldn't help me, but I wanted to make him say the words.
I can't,
he said finally.
Your granddad finds out I helped you leave. I'd be out on my ass, and I don't have anywhere else to go.
How can you sit up here and let it go on? I asked. How can you not do anything? Charlie's gaze returned to mine. His face was etched with lines, his eyes dim. He shook his head and I backed away from him.
Wait,
Charlie said.
Wait a minute.
He raised one finger and crossed the room to a small desk against the wall. He pulled an envelope from the top drawer and held it out to me.
It's all I've got. $500. Won't get you far, but it'll get you somewhere.
Is that what you gave my mother, too? I asked. An envelope of money? Charlie didn't answer, thrust the envelope toward me. I thought about not taking it, showing him what I thought of his attempt at help. I could turn my back and make it obvious that what he was offering wasn't near enough after a lifetime of watching what went on at Roanoke and never speaking up. But I needed to get away more than I needed to make a point. I took the money. Back in my room, I packed my suitcase, stuffed the money down in the bottom of my backpack, and waited. My fingers drummed on the floor where I sat. I felt like Allegra, unable to hold still, my whole body sizzling with nervous energy. When I heard Granddad's heavy tread on the stairs heading down and Allegra's quick steps going up to her room, I went after her. She had her back to me as she dug around in her dresser. I stopped in the doorway for a second, watching her. "Allegra," I said finally, and she whirled around, a shirt bunched in her hand.
"Oh my God," she breathed. "Don't sneak up on me."
She cocked her head.
"You look like hell. What's wrong?"
She most definitely did not look like hell. Her hair was mussed, her cheeks flushed pink, her eyes sparkling. I thought I could see the slightest hint of stubble burn on the tender skin of her neck. My stomach heaved. "I saw you," I said, voice low.
"Saw me what?"
I didn't answer, and the shirt floated out of Allegra's hand, settled on the floor at her feet.
"Oh, Allegra," I whispered.
She ran to me, grasped my hands in hers, and pulled me to the bed, forcing me down to sit beside her.
"It's not a big deal, Lane," she said,
looking at my face and laughing a little.
"Okay, I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not bad. I promise it's not."
I squeezed her hands, trying to force her to focus on my words. "I'm leaving. Right now. Come with me." Allegra's mouth opened, then closed. Her hands went limp in mine.
"Leaving? You can't."
"I can't stay here. Not when... Allegra, it's wrong. It's sick." Her smile was sweet. Patient. As if I simply didn't understand.
"Oh, Lane. It's not like that at all. He loves us so much. And I love him. More than anything. Granddad.
He's our father, Allegra." I practically screamed. Pinpricks of heat bloomed along my neck and chest as my breathing sped up.
"So? That doesn't change anything," Allegra said,
a little more agitated now, the pink in her cheeks flaring to red.
"And he loves us. We're everything to him."
She raised one of my hands and laid it against her hot cheek.
"We really are sisters, you know?"
"How long has it been going on?" I asked. "Your whole life? Since you were little?"
"Oh my God, no!"
Allegra said, eyes wide.
"He's not a pervert. Nothing happened until I was 14, old enough to decide for myself."
Her words were bad enough, but the worst part was seeing how much she believed them, how easily he put it all back on her. I shook my head. "I can't stay. I'm leaving." Allegra had never seen the damage years of this life did, but I had. I'd lived it with my mother. I couldn't do it again. I couldn't let it be me. I tried to pull my hands away, but Allegra held on tight, her fingers digging in so that I hissed through my teeth. The calmness in her eyes faded, replaced with a wild desperation.
"Please don't go," she begged. "Please, Lane, please don't leave me. Please don't leave me."
She was crying now, fat, pregnant tears rolling down her flushed cheeks.
"We can all stay here and be happy. I won't be jealous anymore. It'll be perfect, I promise."
I didn't know what to say to her. What string of words to put together to make her change her mind and come with me? Maybe no combination would ever work. A lifetime of our granddad's whispered lies, stronger than any truth I could ever come up with. I pulled my hands away from hers as gently as I could, my own tears falling. When I stood, she wrapped her arms around my waist, buried her face in my stomach. I looked down, ran my fingers over her dark hair. My hair. My mother's hair. Our father's hair.
"Please," she whispered. "Don't tell anyone, Lane. If you have to go, then go. But let me stay here. This is where I want to be. I love him. Don't tell anyone. Promise."
I could hardly speak, breathing a kind of torture under the heavy weight of pain. And God help me, I promised. But not for Allegra. And not for my granddad. For myself. So no one would ever know where I came from. So I could keep on pretending I didn't know either. I went back to my room and grabbed my suitcase, slung my backpack over my shoulder. I took the stairs as quietly as I could, slunk down the front hall and let myself out the screen door with hardly a sound.
"Lane."
I whirled and found my granddad standing in the doorway, his eyes traveling from my suitcase back to my face. He pushed open the screen and joined me on the porch.
"Why don't you come back in, honey?"
he said.
"So we can talk."
I shook my head, tightened my hand on my backpack strap in the hope he wouldn't see it shaking. Nothing to talk about. He took a careful step toward me.
"Sure there is. We're family. We can work this out. I know we can."
"You're fucking her," I yelled, flinging my backpack toward him. My granddad didn't even flinch. "How do we work that out? And my mother? All of them? All of them?"
"We love each other. I've loved every one of them."
His voice was soft. Reasonable. If I didn't concentrate hard, it would be easy to slip over into believing him. "And what about Gran?" She sits back and what? Tells herself it isn't happening? Or does she not care?
"Your Gran understands,"
Granddad said. My laughter was wild and familiar. I sounded like my mother on those days she locked herself in her room, tearing at her own hair. "Understands what?"
"That you girls are special. So damn special. And what we have together is special, too. It's worth protecting. It means something, Lane, the way we all feel about each other. Other people might not understand, but your Gran does. She doesn't interfere."
"You're crazy," I whispered. I always thought my mother was the crazy one. But really, it was you. I felt the weight of my mother's love for me for the first time. There, on Roanoke's porch, with my whole world crumbling around me. She might not have been able to love me the way a mother should, with kisses and kind words and hopes for my future.
but she'd done the very best thing for me. She'd taken me away from here and tried her hardest to keep me from ever coming back. It wasn't her fault she'd failed. I understood now that she'd held on as long as she was able. I tried to wait. I'm sorry. Discovering the secrets of Roanoke had given my mother back to me, long after the understanding of her pain could do either of us any good.
Where are you going to go?
My granddad asked.
What will you do? You're only 16.
I don't know. Get a job? I'll figure it out. I couldn't allow myself to think beyond the end of the driveway. Not yet. It was too scary. The world too enormous, and I knew fear would lead me right back into the house if I let it. My granddad took a step closer.
You know what happens to girls who run away? They end up living on street corners, prostituting themselves for food and...
How's that any different than what I'd be doing here? I demanded. At least out there, I wouldn't be screwing my own father.
Please don't.
My granddad said like I was stabbing him right in the heart.
Don't make it into something ugly. It's not ugly.
How can you say that? How can you even think that? I thought this place could finally be my home, I said on a cracked whisper. But my mother was right. It's a nightmare. A nightmare made worse, because even with my mother's warning, I fell into it so easily. Caught up in the awful Roanoke spell almost from the start.
Oh, Lainey girl,
my granddad said, his own eyes tearing up.
Of course this is your home. You're a Roanoke girl, through and through.
He was right in front of me now, and he reached out, put a tentative hand on my elbow. His fingers burned into my skin, and I didn't pull away.
But you and Allegra.
My granddad's hand glided up my bare arm.
I love Allegra, he said. But I love you just the same.
That hadn't been what I meant when I spoke, but somehow he read the intent below the surface of my words, the shameful truth I didn't want to acknowledge. Why hadn't he picked me?
I was waiting until you were ready, is all,
he said. His fingers stroked the back of my neck, under my ponytail.
I wanted you, to be sure.
I saw his face moving closer. And still I didn't stop him. He kissed my cheek, the corner of my mouth. He paused, and the world slowed down. I could hear my own harsh breathing, feel the pressure of his fingertips on my neck pulling me closer. His lips against mine were soft, familiar. His kiss tasted of my mother's tears, Allegra's neediness, my own worst impulses. We were all there, all the doomed Roanoke girls, and the touch of his mouth. Something inside me expanded, took flight with dark and twisted wings. It wasn't desire, nothing that simple. It was more like a recognition, like he was already swimming through my blood, already inside of me. He was a destiny it was possible to run from, but one I would never escape. I lurched backward, covered my mouth with one hand. No, I said. I rubbed hard at my lips, trying to dislodge the feel of him, the slide of his tongue against mine.
Don't go,
he said, voice rough and pleading, the edges of his mouth white with strain.
I love you.
I dropped my hand.
No,
I said again, my voice louder. I could tell from the look on his face that it wasn't a word he was used to hearing. He didn't look angry, just confused. I was probably the first one of us to ever say it to him. But it didn't make me feel strong or brave. I only felt abandoned. I grabbed my backpack, lifted my suitcase, and walked down the porch steps onto the gravel drive. Hot wind howled off the prairie, whistled under the eaves of the house. I walked away, and he didn't try to stop me. He let me go, and I told myself that was how I wanted it. Tommy was waiting for me at the end of the drive, leaning against the side of his car.
Hey,
he said when he saw me.
Why do you have a suitcase?
I need a ride to Wichita. When I'd called him, the only person I could think of to ask, I just said I needed a ride, left all the details for later.
Wichita?
Tommy said slowly, like he'd never heard the word before. Yeah. I opened the back door and heaved my suitcase inside. To the bus station.
Lane.
Tommy put his hand on my arm, but I flinched away. I couldn't stand for anyone to touch me. Not yet. Not now.
What's going on?
Just, can you do it or not, Tommy? I asked, squinting against the brutal sun. If you can't, I'll hitch a ride. Tommy stared at me for a second, then nodded. I slid into the passenger seat and waited for him to get in. I took one last look at Roanoke in the distance. For a second, it looked like Allegra was standing on the front porch, as she had on my arrival. But it might have been a trick of the light. Tommy waited until we were 10 miles down the road before he spoke, which was longer than I thought he'd be able to make it.
Does Cooper know about this?
No, and you're not going to tell him either. Tommy laughed.
How am I supposed to keep this a secret? It's going to be pretty obvious you're gone.
You can tell him I'm gone, but don't tell him you drove me to Wichita. I took a deep breath. And don't tell him I'm pregnant. The car swerved a little, the driver's side tire skating the edge of the double yellow line before Tommy pulled it back.
You can't tell me something like that, he protested. You can't tell me you're pregnant and say it's a secret.
Before I'd ever set foot in his car, I'd known Tommy would need an answer, a reason why I was leaving. And I'd promised Allegra I wouldn't say anything about our granddad. Even without that promise, I don't think I could have made my mouth form the words. Not to Tommy, who even if presented with the evidence right in front of his face, would probably have tried to find a way to make it into something less horrible. Something he could live with. So I told him about the baby instead. And I trusted he wouldn't break my confidence. Tommy might have loved Cooper like a brother, but even he wasn't naive enough to believe Cooper and I had any business being parents.
What are you going to do? Tommy continued. Are you going to have the baby? Do you have any money?
He fired the questions at me, glancing from the road to me and back again, each word amping up my anxiety. I hadn't given much thought to what came next, my only goal to get away from Roanoke. But if Tommy kept talking, I would panic, beg him to turn the car around and take me back to where at least I knew exactly what the future held.
Shut up, Tommy, I said. I don't know, okay? I don't know.
I took a deep breath, closed my eyes, and let the sun seep through my eyelids. All I know for sure is you can't tell Cooper.
It's not fair, Tommy said. To ask that of me.
Tommy,
If you think anything in life is fucking fair, you're an idiot.
He stopped talking to me after that. His mouth set in a thin line, his hands clamped on the wheel. The parking lot of the bus station was deserted when we drove up, only a few cars parked on the outer edges. It could have been the same day I arrived. Nothing different except for me. I thought I was stepping into a whole new world that day, one that might make up for all the years that had come before. I felt the hot sting of tears and rubbed my temples, willing them away. Tommy pulled up to the entrance, and I put a hand on his when he started to set the emergency brake.
No, it's okay. Just drop me off. I can't leave you here.
I tried to smile.
Sure you can.
This is going to kill him, Tommy said. I've known Cooper my whole life, Lane. I know him better than anyone does. And I know how he feels about you, even if you want to pretend like you don't.
I opened the passenger door, sucking in a breath as the heat radiating off the pavement smacked me in the face.
It was one summer, Tommy. Give me a break.
What does that matter? One summer is enough. Hell, sometimes one day is all it takes to change your life.
He was right. One summer was more than long enough for a lot of things. Already, I knew these 100 days would be the rotted foundation the whole rest of my life was built upon.
He'll get over it, I said with a nonchalance I didn't feel.
As long as you don't tell him about the baby, that will only make it worse.
What about Allegra?
Tommy asked. The words rushed out of him as if he were using everything he could think of to try to change my mind. I couldn't look at him. Kept my gaze focused on the tinted doors of the bus station.
She'll be fine too.
She has you. My throat ached as I swallowed. And Roanoke. I got out of the car and pulled my suitcase from the back seat.
She'll be fine.
Tommy leaned over, braced his hand on the passenger seat and looked out at me.
Are you sure about this?
I nodded.
Yeah.
I slammed the back door.
Thanks for the ride.
Tommy shook his head, blew out a defeated breath.
Good luck, Lane.
I stood on the uneven pavement and watched him drive away. Stayed there until his silver car turned into a tiny, glimmering speck in the distance. When the woman at the ticket counter asked me where I was headed, I looked over at the big map of the United States, crisscrossed with bus routes, and picked the farthest point.
If I was lucky, nothing in California would remind me of Cooper. I would have my baby and give her to a family who would raise her under mild, sunny skies and watchful smiles. My granddad would never lay eyes on her. I would stand in the ocean and let it wash Roanoke away, leaving me clean and new. I would start again. Apparently, Tommy wasn't the only idiot.
Now, the hyoid bone is small. Most people have never heard of it. I never had before Tommy called and told us the news. Now, I'm sitting in front of Granddad's computer, my gaze fastened on an image of the U-shaped bone at the base of the throat. The single bone coroners examine to determine if someone has been strangled. A lot of times it doesn't break, even when a person's life is throttled out of her. But Allegra's did break, before her body disappeared into the dank water of the swimming hole. Allegra was murdered. Strangled. Her hyoid bone snapped. They found it tangled in the rotted skeins of her hair. Tommy was professional on the phone. His voice broke only once. Near the end. I'm going to be late to her funeral if I don't pull it together and find something to wear. Gran laid out a plain black dress.